no one can diminish Yahweh's gift, which is the covenant. His willingness to adopt us into his family. His ability to make us immortal, to perfect us, to enrich us, and to empower us. And at this very moment, Kirk, I am particularly pleased that Yahweh's gift and the benefits of that gift are wholly and completely based upon the credibility and the ability of the creator of the universe.
Mm-hmm. You're here.
Yeah. So this complete capitulation on Iran's nuclear program, which seems to me to make a perfect sense as it relates to prophecy. That news, while horrific, while frightening, while troubling, it's of no consequence to you and I.
No.
However, for those who have been fooled by Paul and Christianity, they're going to endure the aftermath. You know, it's interesting that as I view the landscape around Yahweh's prophecies of the Magog War and of what's going to happen in the next 10 to 15 years, one of the things that strikes me is that Iran does not deploy nuclear weapons in Israel.
No, they would destroy Israel.
Right. Yeah, God's not going to allow that. So, but what you do have is places like Damascus being left as a twisted heap of ruins. You have greater Syria falling. And you have a massive and united flood of jihadists going into Israel, way more than conventional weapons can stem that flow. And so the part of this that I found to be troubling wasn't Iran's ability to, within a year, have a nuclear bomb. That didn't change. That's as it was. It isn't even the arms race that it's going to touch off in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and other related countries. That was inevitable. The part that should be alarming to Americans is that it turns open the spigot on Iran's ability financially to engage in a fight to the death with Sunni Islam and gives them full and unfettered access to the best weapon systems in the world to bring that, make that war ever more deadly.
Maybe that's the only thing that could keep this going for so long.
Yeah.
Because without them being somewhat of a power,
right,
they cannot continue to fight. They would be broke eventually.
Right. Yeah, and this war between Sunni and Shia Islam, which is that's the civil war right now in Iraq. That's the civil war in Syria. That is the civil war in Yemen. And it's a war that is his more or less simmering in related and nearby countries. But in those, it's a full-blown civil war. And that civil war, we've talked about this before, the Shias are outmanned 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
So 4-1. You know, the U.S. and during the War of Northern Aggression, the uncivil war, it outmanned the South by more than 2-1, almost 3-1. And in a war of attrition, that's what Ulysses S. Grant said. You know, I could lose 100,000 men in a battle, so long as the South loses 25,000 men in a battle, they can kill us at a 4-1 rate, and it will prevail. And that was basically the drunkard's strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have in the in the Islamic world is a very similar kind of thing. The Shias are outmanned somewhere between 4-1 and 5-1. And so that puts a limit as to how long this can be dragged out before Shia Islam is no more. And then the other issue is because of the United States' willingness to supply arms to the Sunni fiefdoms, particularly Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and Qatar and the like, and Turkey,
right,
and Egypt, that Sunni Muslims outgun, and I'm using gun to speak of all,
sure,
advanced weapon systems, outgun Shia Islam by in the range of 20-1. I mean, it's just overwhelming, the difference between what Iran was able to bring to bear in terms of weapons versus the rest of the Sunni Islamic world. So what this does is enable the Shias to be able to put up a much bigger, longer-lasting fight. And that is exactly what we see. We see this battle between Sunni and Shia Muslims really dominating the world of Islam over the next, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
We were always wondering, how in the world do you keep these countries, which are now armed to the teeth, primarily with American weapons, enriched,
right,
beyond just reason because of OPEC?
Oil, yeah.
Yeah. How do you keep these countries from using their resources to do what they want to do, what they've claimed they announced they're going to do, which is to invade and destroy Israel? How in the world, particularly with Israel now being so shortchanged by the United States in terms of defense systems and her neighbors being so enriched in terms of weaponry, how do you preclude them from wiping Israel off the face of the earth over the next 10 years and therefore negate Yahweh's promises, because Yahweh,
right,
doesn't have them invaded until 2026.
Yeah,
2026, 2027.
Mm-hmm.
So how in the world, that's 11 years. How do you get out 11 years? And so my conclusion was that, you get out of 11 years by them waging war, the Muslims waging war with each other. But how do you make that last another, it's gone on now for 3 years. How do you make that last another 11 years when one side is out manned 4-5-1 and outgunned closer to 21. How in the world do you do that? Well, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
This is how you do it.
Level the playing field pretty easily.
We've just turned the spigots to full on Iran's ability to fight a conventional war against Sunni Islam. And the Iranians, because of the Persian heritage, it's not as extreme as Israelis. Israelis in a war against Muslims have a somewhere between a 100-1 to 1,000-1 leverage. The Israeli capability, and in terms of response, intelligence, processing power, training, the Israelis are something in the range of between 100 and 1,000 times more capable than your average Muslim attacker.
Yeah.
In the case of Shia versus Sunni Islam, Sunni Islams are primarily of Arab descent and have a heritage of ignorance.
Yeah.
But the Shias are primarily of Persian descent. One of the earliest and most sophisticated civilizations, yeah.
Right.
There's Assyria and Babylon and Persia successively. So they're probably 4-5-1 more capable than the average Arab or Muslim, which is the primary Sunni Muslims. So that is your... That's your answer.
Well, my father was head of Northrop for years in Saudi Arabia.
Mm,
and,
sorry.
Well, that was he was head of construction companies around the world, and before he retired, he did that. They built that airport in Saudi Arabia, and then he moved back to Australia and retired, or lived there for 8 years with Northrop and retired. But he said they would give them these airplanes, and the Saudis couldn't fly them. They would just stick them in the ground because they'd start looking out the windows to see where they were, rather than read things. So they were not a real sophisticated group in Saudi Arabia. It didn't matter what they did. They just couldn't train these people. Now, I don't suspect that's quite as bad as it was in the 70s. But
it's bad. You can give the Saudi Arabians the most advanced American fighter, and you could give the Israelis a 30-year-old antique. A 40-year-old design antique
and
by comparison.
With it, yeah.
Oh, by, and if you were to put 100 Saudi fighters against one Israeli, it's not a fair fight.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that sounds racist.
No.
And I don't mean it to sound racist.
It's reality.
It's the difference in culture.
Yeah,
Islam is the dumbest religion. It has everything in Islam screams against intelligence, against logical thinking, against quality decision making. I mean, everything in Islam just says be belligerent. I mean, the only thing that has ever really been part of the Islamic economy is robber barons.
Yeah.
You know,
they also don't have a heroic point of view from life, treasuring life either.
So. No, they. In fact, every time a Muslim attacks, they attack defenseless civilians. There, Islam has never garnered a will, a sustained will, for Muslims to attack a well armed foe. It's a terrorist religion. It's a religion where the defenseless individuals are attacked. And so
you can't count an army that'll just throw their uniforms off and drop their guns and leave.
Correct.
Fired at
them. Right. So what we have here in this deal, you know, I know the second hour where our perspective is Yahweh's perspective.
This is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, but you and I have been agonizing over how in the world, and I'm going to get so many emails, how in the world is the are we going to postpone what is described in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17 and 18 for 10, 11 years? Now we know. Kirk, it's probably reasonable that we backtrack a little bit and share with those who may be new to the program what we're talking about.
Sure.
Yeshaya 17 is a depiction of the Islamic world as we see it today. It speaks of Damascus coming to look like Homs and Aleppo. Have you seen pictures of Homs and Aleppo? Damascus is southwest Syria. Homs and Aleppo are northwest Syria.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the pictures, it literally is exactly what Yahweh described, the twisted heap of ruins. And the Islamic State and al-Nusra are currently south and due east of Damascus. Al-Nusra Front is due north of Damascus. At this point, you know, collectively between al-Nusra and the Islamic State, they have control of, I would say, about 80% of Syria.
I would think so, yeah.
And I think the only significant city not under control of the two fundamentalist Sunni Islamic groups would be Damascus.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of the playing field. Now, if you look at Iraq, the very, very, very slender top of Iraq, the northernmost part of Iraq, is controlled by the Kurds.
Right.
So they just want to be left alone.
Yeah, they would pull out easily. They leave us alone.
Yeah, just leave us alone. Then south of that, you have the Islamic State controlling everything in Iraq with the exception of the predominant Shia communities, most of which are in southeastern Iraq, Baghdad, of course, being the largest concentration of Shias in Iraq. And those areas are controlled entirely by Iran. And so that's kind of the picture that you have. And there is no chance nor no incentive for the Islamic State to try to occupy Baghdad. They don't have the resources, nor is there any inclination to do that. They can only survive in places where Sunni Islam is the majority strain, because they'll have enough sympathizers there that they, and their terrorist nature is such that they can squash all opposition.
Right.
But they can't do it,
they'd run out, or they'd be fighting every minute of the day. You can't.
Correct. With both sides thinking that they're earning, they're punching their ticket to Allah's brothel by killing a fellow Muslim of a different persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Iraq and Syria are just about as you would expect prior to the destruction of Damascus. Now the problem has been that the destruction of Damascus was imminent, because Damascus is it's a blend between Shia and Sunni Islam, with the Shias depending on Iran and Hezbollah, Iran's Marines, if you will, for support, which is the only reason Damascus still stands. It was just a matter of time before Damascus was going to fall, based upon the rising influence of the Islamic State, if something dramatic didn't happen. And Yahweh says that prior to the beginning of the Magog War, shrinking Israel at the waist, forfeiting the West Bank, and this flood of Muslims into the country, that Damascus becomes a heap of ruins. Well, that was looking like it was going to be imminent, like within. How would you postpone that a year, much less 11 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, infighting.
This is the answer. That the Iranian ability now to make it difficult, if not impossible, for al-Nusra and the Islamic State to render Damascus a heap of ruins has been pushed out by America's capitulation, where we have given Iran the financial means, the economic means, and the military means to defend its ally.
Yeah, you know, we have a history of how that works, and we have the two nuclear powers in the U.S., pardon me, the U.S. and Russia as a standoff, and then they could only fight conventional war without self-destructing. And they had unlimited, it seemed like they had unlimited money to keep rearming themselves. And, of course, now we're the ones that are doing the rearming. But
yes, and the funding, because we're, of course, transferring, rather than developing our own energy independence by drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, by drilling off the California and southeast coast of the nation, rather than expanding fracking, rather than drilling in Anwar, we are instead funding them. There's two aspects of the Yeshaya, Isaiah 17 and 18 prophecies that have been affirmed in this most recent announcement from the Obama nation. The first of those is, since we know that the utter destruction of Syria and the fall of the Syrian government is the event that precedes the capitulation of the West Bank and the forfeiture of that territory of Israel, and then the immediate start of World War III, which is the Magog War. Since we know those events are 1, 2, 3 in successive order over a very short period of time, this is the answer as to how it's possible in a war where the Syrian military is losing every battle, that the Islamic State is growing in leaps and bounds. This is the means that the Shias, the Iranians, have of bolstering the Syrian government and Damascus for a decade.
Now, for those out there that want to read that, isn't that in Neshiyadiyah Volume 7, right?
Correct.
Okay, so they should... now, of course, now, in relation to what we were talking about yesterday, related to what we were talking about yesterday, you have to remember now, if you're a Christian, you can't go read that because that's it'll corrupt you because it came out of the Torah, right?
Well, yeah, because the Torah and prophets, which is one thing, according to Yahusha, as he's speaking of the Torah and prophets... and we use Torah and prophets, and you know them, and we would use as a pronoun to refer to them as they.
Yeah.
Yosha did not, and Yahweh does not.
But it was his voice,
right? Because the Torah is Yahweh's guidance and instructions, but it's Yahweh's guidance regarding and teaching for time past, present, and future.
Right.
And the Torah was conveyed by one of Yahweh's prophets, Moshe. There's enormous prophecy in the Torah. And there is Yahweh's guidance regarding past, present, and future history and how to deal with it and how to prepare for it, runs, therefore, his Torah, runs throughout his prophetic declarations. So the Torah is Yahweh's teaching that is provided by the prophets, of which Moshe, the scribe of the Torah, is one. So Torah and prophets are a singular entity. So yes, this is from the prophet Yahshayah, but Yahshayah never spoke for himself. Yahweh speaks through him in first person, and Yahweh provides his guidance and instruction about history, past, present, and future.
And you won't find I say, but I say.
Right. Yeah, you know, no, you don't ever find but I say. Therefore, in the midst of this, as a Christian, yeah, you would have to discard your Torah, prophets, and Psalms, what you would refer to as the Old Testament, because half of your New Testament is a wholesale repudiation of it. So, you know, you're just a complete hypocrite if you embrace the New Testament and cling to or even examine or consider anything in which you consider to be the Old Testament.
That's just the stupidest thing you ever heard.
Well, of course.
Which, to be fair,
yes,
it's not like being a hypocrite is something unfamiliar to Christianity.
No. Yeah, I know. Christianity considers itself to be the religion founded by Jesus Christ, even though they do not know his name, they do not know his title, they do not know his relationship to Yahweh, they do not know Yahweh's name, they do not know the effective association between Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuah, and the events of Yahusha's life, and they do not understand nor heed anything Yahusha said about the Torah and prophets, nor the fact that he was Torah observant and was anti-religious. So, yeah, in Christianity, you have to be a wholesale hypocrite. Otherwise, the religion just completely disintegrates. All true. Now, as we consider this prophecy. So now we have an answer as to how outgunned 20-1 and outmanned 5-1 Shia Islam can prevail in keeping Syria from completely disintegrating and Damascus from becoming a heap of rubble. So, and that's the trigger for the eventual forfeiture of the West Bank from Israel, and then that's the trigger for the Magog War, the All-Islamic War against Israel. So now we know why these events are still 11 years on our horizon. But there's a second aspect of this, Kirk, that I think became clear. Who is it that is facilitating these things, which are extraordinarily negative?
The United States.
Yeah. So why, that explains why the 17th chapter of Yeshayah, which describes what we've just been depicting in greater Syria and Damascus and the like, and the capitulation of the West Bank of Israel and the flood of Muslims into Israel following that, it's to start the Magog War. That's why it is followed by woe, and the woe is directed at the United States.
Yep. Well, Lurch, you know this. He's going to move from that table to the next table where he gets to pound his fist and say, you know, you've got to give up the West Bank.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. That's now that he has capitulated on Iran. Now, and you know, what little he got from Iran in the dark recesses of those negotiations. I would be willing to bet all but my first and second born that the reason that he finally got Iran to agree to even the terms they finally agreed to was in the private conversations. They say, you know, we have a common enemy. And we're in a better position than anyone in the world to curtail Israel's ability to defend itself. You sign this, Israel will go ballistic. And we know this administration is already opposed to Israel, more opposed to Israel than any administration previously. We will immediately turn our attention to Israel, and we will we'll dismantle Israel from within. We'll make Israel defenseless.
Well, I guess they didn't read Gideon, huh?
Yeah. I mean, since Kerry has and Obama have essentially declared that they are desirous, if you look at all of their rhetoric and all of the deals and negotiations that they've had and what they've said in the international community, since that is their overt plan, what would have kept Kerry from throwing that out into the negotiations as the reason that the Iranians should embrace this?
No, I would have thought that was on the table all the time, and at least on the back of the table.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that they know where they stand. I mean, Kerry, right. You know, before he went into those negotiations, he was pounding on Israel again.
Correct. Yeah, he went into the negotiations.
It wasn't a secret. I mean, he's not doing it secretly.
Yeah, he was saying that if Israel did not capitulate on giving up the West Bank and Jerusalem, if Israel did not capitulate, then Israel would face international sanction from the United States and from Europe. The very sanctions he just listed from Iran. So, there you are. So that is precisely what we surmise was discussed in the back rooms based upon the rhetoric that has surfaced. So that being the case, the difference between you and I in surmising this, and Yahweh, who knows it?
Yeah. Well, the good news is that throughout history, you've got Gideon and you've got Hezekiah and person after person after person, or group after group, that when they turn to Yahweh, you know,
yeah,
he saves them.
Yeah.
The numbers are always stacked so high against them, it's unfathomable.
Yeah, look at Hezekiah and the Assyrians with 185,000 heavily armed Assyrians surrounding Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And the fact that Yahweh defended his people. If you choose to rely on Yahweh, he will defend you. So we're moving into a world that is going to crumble before our eyes. The kind of carnage that the world witnessed in World War II, where 50 million people died. That's
hundreds of millions.
Yeah, it's going to be billions.
Well, in the
first and second phase of the Magog War of World War III, it's a two-phased war. And in the first, it's one quarter of the Earth's population. In the second phase, it's a third of those who remain, so that's half the world's population. Now, all of those things aren't war-related. Many of them are, but we're looking at 3.5 billion people that are going to die between 2027 and 2030. So in that three-year period, it's going to be approximately a billion people a year from war, and the war is going to be nuclear, and also from an asteroid strike and from a major tsunami based upon the side of a volcanic island sliding into the sea. Those are the numbers.
Even if you didn't believe those things, you're giving crazy people, I mean, mm-hmm. really nut people who yeah. have an agenda to kill, who think they get to heaven by killing more people,
mm-hmm.
you're giving them nuclear weapons,
mm-hmm.
encouraging them to get it, I mean, mm-hmm. financing it. And how insane does, you know, do you have to be to do
right.
that?
Right.
I mean, I know it's rhetorical, but my God, yeah. people are so... And why do Americans feel safe?
Why do they just go along? Yeah, it's... I think most Americans, you know, because
we're terrifyingly stupid.
Yeah, we're terrifyingly stupid. What did Yahweh say about stupid?
My people have lost the lack of knowledge.
Yeah, my people are destroyed.
Destroyed.
Destroyed. Destroyed. Destroyed.
Correct.
Because of stupid. Yeah, my people are destroyed.
Because they're so...
Stupid. Because of stupid. Oh, well. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, can I just read that little comment from Hoshea? I've got most of it.
Yeah.
This is the way you translated it, and I've looked them up, so I know you're pretty accurate here. My people are completely destroyed, and they will perish. Dama, they are cut off and will cease to exist. And the Nipto, perfect, telling us that people have actively participated in their own absolute demise. They will perish because of a lack of understanding, belay, corrupted information, inadequate knowledge, and deficient discernment. For indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected, spurned and despised, literally refused and disdained knowledge and understanding, information and discernment, so then I will consistently reject you and avoid you.
Wow.
That's y'all.
Yeah, can I add something to that? I'm glad you read that.
Absolutely.
Because... what we described, which is a billion people are dying a year in 2027, 2028, and 2029. A billion people a year are going to cease to exist. Their souls destroyed. Exactly as Yahweh said, out of just sheer ignorance and unwillingness to think, and a willingness to observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider his Torah teaching. And by the way, the next statement is because you have forgotten my Torah, I will forget your children.
I'm sorry, yeah, I didn't have to.
Yes, it's specific. Because of that, their souls will cease to exist. They'll be destroyed. That's the good part. The good part of the immediate future that awaits us as a result of what America has done and continues to do, and Islam has done and continues to do, the good part is a billion souls are going to succumb and die, ceasing to exist over the 3 years between 2027 and 2030. Now, you have any idea why I say that's the good part?
Because the horror that's coming is even worse for the next few years.
Because at the midpoint of the tribulation, once the Torahless one imposes his financial plan, which will be very similar to what's taking place in Greece, even a more draconian version, but very similar, where you sign up and surrender to his authority to participate in his new economic system.
But
once you do that, you've made your choice, and there will no longer be death and destruction of a soul. From that point on, every soul will continue to exist forever, separated from God and Sheol. So the good part is that the souls that succumb to these wars that are unleashed based upon American ignorance and belligerence, those souls, there's no punishment. They just cease to exist. But of the 3 billion souls that remain,
can you imagine?
There is no relief ever for them. Ever. Because they will have aligned themselves with the Torahless one, with Christians will know as the Antichrist. He will be almost identical to Paul, almost identical to Hadrian, if you want to look up his personality profile. He'll be very similar, a blend between Muhammad, Paul, and Hadrian, if you're looking for a personality profile. Not very different even from Nero or Caligula. Very, very similar to those characters.
In particular, yeah.
And so that's the good part.
That's the most brilliant thing you can hear.
Right. Now, there's an answer to all that.
Yeah.
An absolute guarantee that you will not succumb to either of those two. That you won't be here for the 3 years where a billion people a year die, and you will never be susceptible to the ongoing incarceration of your soul. What's that, Kirk?
Well, you turned us to become part of the covenant family.
And how do you...
The terms and conditions.
And where would you find them?
In the Torah.
So when Yahweh said, my people are destroyed, their souls cease to exist because of their avoidance and complete ignorance of and lack of understanding, what he was speaking of is that the solution there, if you don't want your soul destroyed, is to read the Torah. Study the Torah. Observe the Torah.
Shamar.
Right. Shamar, the Torah. Shamar means to closely examine and carefully consider. If we simply, if you, anyone listening to this program, turns their attention to Yahweh's Torah, even if you just read Bereshit in the beginning, you would understand the terms and conditions of the covenant. If you just read Shemoth names, you'd understand the invitations that Yahweh has provided for us to walk to Him. Just read the first two books. And if you don't want to have to deal with Hebrew and the majesty of the Hebrew language, then go to yadayah.com. Go to introtogod.org. It's all served up there for you.